Ruth chapter 3. I've entitled the message tonight, Ruth's Proposal. Ruth's Proposal. You know, in our culture, it is the young man's privilege of proposing to a young woman that he desires to marry. And I have fond memories of the cool spring day that I asked Melody to be my wife. And I've never regretted that. It's been a blessing over the years. And this evening we're going to look at how in certain circumstances in Jewish culture, the woman did the proposing. A bit of an unusual situation. And we will see that tonight as we dig into this. And as we look at this unique story, I want to draw some types and principles from this passage that I believe can be a help and encouragement to us in a great way. And so let's take a look at this and dig into the details of it. First of all, we find the unusual laws. Verse 1 to 3, it says, "And then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her," now she's talking to Ruth, "My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee?" And when she talks about the rest, she's talking about a husband type of a rest. So she doesn't have to toil herself. She could have a husband that would meet her needs and care for her. Verse 2, "And now, is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself, therefore, and anoint thee, and put on thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man until he have done eating and drinking. And it shall be, when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet, and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. And she said unto her, all that thou sayest unto me, I will do." Now, as we look at this, this is a very unusual situation here, but it brings us back to some of the laws that we've already looked at and alluded to in previous messages regarding the Redeemer. All right? Now, we saw how the kinsman Redeemer had to be a man who was a relative, a close relative, and if one of his relatives had become poor and had to sell his property, or even to the point where he had to sell himself as a slave, then a kinsman redeemer could come and redeem him by paying the debt and setting him free, or setting him free from the debt that he had owed. And so this was the action of a kinsman redeemer. It was not mandatory, it was voluntary, but it had to be obviously someone who was able, had the finances to be able to do that, and also someone who was willing to do that. But then we also alluded to, and I want us to dig into a little bit more tonight, the second law that dealt with this, and I call it the law of marrying a widow. All right, the law of marrying the widow. And in this law, the widow could ask one of her husband's brothers or close relatives to marry her and give her a child in her husband's name. Strange law. All right. Now, let's just take a look at that strange law back in Deuteronomy. Let's flip back over there. It's not too many pages over. Deuteronomy chapter 25. Deuteronomy 25. And I want us to just read a few of those verses there. Deuteronomy 25, beginning with verse number 5. Deuteronomy 25, beginning with verse number 5. "If brethren dwell together and one of them die and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her and take her to him to wife, and perform the duty of an husband's brother unto her. And it shall be that if the firstborn, that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of his brother, which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel. And if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate of the elders, unto the elders, and say, my husband's brother refuseth to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of the city shall call him and speak unto him, and if he stand to it and say, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders and loose his shoe from off his foot and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, so shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house. And his name shall be called in Israel, the house of him that hath his shoe loosed. What a law. Unusual law. All right? But as we think about this law, this was what was taking place here in the book of Ruth. And the reason for the law, I believe, has at least two goals. And those goals would include this. First of all, it was to protect womanhood. A widow in Israel that had no children and was left a widow, she was a beggar. She had nothing. All she could do was beg for her food or glean for her food. She had a hard, hard, hard life ahead of her. Even if she had property, she still had a hard life because she had no one to work the property. It was a very difficult thing. So God was providing for her so that she would get a husband that would provide for her, meet her needs, help her and care for her and supply her needs for her. So that was a very good thing, that God was protecting womanhood. Not only that, but God was protecting the land ownership. All right? So if this widow, let's just say her husband dies and she's of the tribe of Benjamin, and her husband dies and she decides that she's going to marry somebody from the tribe of Dan. But she's the sole owner of her property because her husband's dead. And she marries this guy from Dan, then all of a sudden the people from Dan own that property. And that's not what God wanted. God said, no, I want you to keep your property, so there's not an issue here. And so this was another thing that God was doing, to be able to keep the property in the same family so that it didn't leave the family. And God was taking care of that need. Now, in our story of Ruth here, Naomi decided that it was time for Ruth to seek a kinsman redeemer. And Naomi knew all about this, and apparently, you know, maybe the girls had talked it over. You know, it sounds like Ruth wasn't ignorant of this situation, wasn't necessarily something that the Moabites did, but it was something that the Israelites did, and they were aware of that. And so as far as she was concerned, Boaz was the man for the job. All right? And Boaz apparently was a much older man. He indicated in his comments, and we'll see a few moments here, that he indicated that Ruth didn't seek any of the young men, but sought after him. Now, Ruth was young, and he apparently was fairly old. We know nothing about him. He may have been an old bachelor, never got married, or it's possible that he was a widower. His wife had died. We don't know. God doesn't tell us anything about Boaz's background. But he was winnowing barley in the threshing floor. Now, let me just explain that a little bit, just to clarify in our minds. Most of you aren't farmers in your origin. Winnowing the barley was a big, hard, hot, dirty job. What happened is they would bring all the sheaves. Remember, when they go out in the field, they would cut the grain down with a knife or a sickle, and they would hold the grain, and they'd cut it off, and they'd put it in their arm, and they'd hold some more and cut it off, put it in their arm until they got a bundle, and then they bundled that up and wrapped it around with another piece of straw, and they stood it up, and that was a sheave. And then at the end of the day, they would go along and they'd pick up all the sheaves and load them on their cart or their donkey or whatever it was they were carrying it with, and take it back to the threshing floor. When it got to the threshing floor, you had these stalks of grain, you know, with the straw on it yet, and the heads of the grain were all still there, and they would take it back there and they would lay it on the threshing floor. Now, the threshing floor was a large area. There was a flat area. Sometimes it was a hard rock. Other times it was a big flat area of clay that they had smoothed out and packed down very, very firmly and swept it clean. And they would take and lay the grain out on that, and then they took and they had a sled. A sled was made of heavy wood. Sometimes it had some steel spikes on it or wooden spikes on it, but it was heavy. And they would have the oxen pull that sled around on top of the grain. And the oxen would go back and forth and around and back and forth on top of this grain to try to scruffle up the grain and rough it up. And what it was doing is it was shelling all the seed from the grain, from the stalks. But that wasn't the winnowing. The winnowing was the dirty, hard part. The winnowing then, once the grain would all had all been separated from the heads like that, then the farmer had to take his fork, and on a windy day, he would take the fork, and he would fork up the, and throw it into the air, and the chaff would blow with the wind, and the grain would fall in a pile. And he'd do it again, and it'd blow and fall, and do it again, and stuff was falling over, and his eyes would get full of chaff, and it was hard, and it was itchy, and sticky, hot, miserable job. But he would do that again, and again, and again, and then he would pick up the straw, and he'd look at it, and oh, if there's still some grains in it, maybe he'd say, all right, let's shovel up the grain, get that out of here, and then we'll bring the cow in with the sled again, and we'll go over it again and try to get some more of this grain. But they would keep doing it, and they'd throw it up in the air until all the grain was out of the stalks of the grain, and all the kernels were out. And then he just kept doing that until the wind blew all the chaff away, and he was left with nothing but clean wheat, or barley, as the case may be. And that was what Boaz was doing. He and his workmen were winnowing the wheat. It was a lot of work, and it was a hot, dusty, dirty job. And at the end of the day, they would customarily, after they've worked all day long, they'd have a big meal at the end of the day, and then they would curl up and go to sleep next to their pile of grain. Now, that grain was valuable to them. That was their life's day. They needed that grain, and they didn't want anybody stealing it or animals coming in and eating it. And so they would often sleep there next to their pile of grain that night, and they'd keep working at this until they had it all done. Then they bagged it up and put it in their barns or their storage containers to be able to use for grain for their animals and also for their bread that they would make for themselves. And so this was a huge task, and it was a big, big responsibility. Now, let me illustrate for you a little bit of this law of the widow. And just make up a little, I made up a little story here to try to help you to understand a little bit of what the significance of it would be. Let's just suppose that a man of the tribe of Benjamin was named Gemariah. And Gemariah had three brothers. And he began showing an interest in the young woman down the road. And when his brothers found out, they called for a family council. And they sat everybody down and they said, Gemariah, you've been spending a lot of time down the road. Are you taking an interest in that woman down the road? And Gemariah says, yes, I am. I'm planning on marrying her. And they said, now hang on now, brother. We're not so sure we like that idea. You know, you remember that law that if you marry this woman down the road and you die, then one of us are going to have to marry her. And she's kind of an unusual woman, and we're not so sure we like that idea. And he said, well, it's too bad, brothers. I like her, and I like her unusual ways. And they said, yes, but you don't understand. You may die. You may die in battle. You may suddenly die of a heart attack. And then she's going to come to one of us and want us to marry her. And we don't want to marry her. And if we won't marry her, then she's going to take us to court. And we're going to stand there. And she's going to take our shoe off and spit in our face. And we're going to be terribly ashamed. And we don't want to go through all that. So we don't think you should marry her. Well, I don't care what you think. I'm going to marry her anyway. Now, you can see a little bit, you know, in our culture, we don't go through that kind of thing. But, you know, you think about it, those of you who have brothers and sisters, you know, if your brother died and you had to marry into his family, you think, well, I don't think I'd like that idea. All right? And that's exactly what was taking place here. And so it was a strange law, but it was one that, you know, it was a law that they had to think seriously about, especially because there was a bunch of brothers in the family. Now, you can see how this law had a good side, but it also had a bad side. And it's an indication here that God made these rules and these laws because God cares about us. God cares about the people that, like the widows that had nothing. God cares about them. And that's a very important thing for us to remember, that God cares. And it's a big blessing to us to see that. Now, we see, secondly, the careful preparation. And we read that in verses 3 to 5, that Naomi was instructed on several things. Naomi instructed Ruth, first of all, to wash herself. You know, you think, well, why? Well, let's stop and think. What has Ruth been doing? She's been out doing what? Gleaning grain in the fields. And out in the hot sun, gleaning grain from early morning until late evening, and she'd come home and she'd beat out her grain, and she probably didn't smell all that well. They didn't have deodorant in those days. She probably was dusty, dirty, smelly, didn't smell very good. So Naomi says, first of all, you need to wash. And then she said, you need to anoint yourself. Anoint yourself. Now, the anointing was an oil that would, you know, make their skin shine, and it would also make them softer, and it would, but often the anointing oil had some perfume of some sort in it. Maybe significant or maybe just slight perfume, but it was something that was to make them appear nicer. And so there was the anointing. And then she was to put on clean clothing. Right? Her work clothes were obviously smelly from the sweat of the day and dirty, and she said, put on some clean clothes. And then she said, go to where Boaz was at the threshing floor. And she was to wait until the work was all done, they'd eaten their meal, and wait until everybody has gone to bed and they're sleeping next to their pile of grain. And you watch where Boaz was. Apparently it was a big threshing floor, and there was lots of different farmers that were there threshing their grain. It wasn't just Boaz. And so she said, mark out where Boaz is, and you find him. And then she said, you go lay, uncover his feet and lay down near his feet. I thought, that's a significant statement. We're going to dig into that in a moment. And Naomi told her just what she was to say when Boaz woke up and found her there. Told her exactly what to do. And Ruth obeyed Naomi. Verse 5 again. And she said unto her, all that thou sayest unto me, I will do. So Naomi's given her daughter-in-law these instructions, and Ruth says, okay, Mom, I'll do it. I'll do you exactly like you said. And so she followed those instructions explicitly. Then we find her bold venture, verses 6 and 7. Verse 6 says, and she went down unto the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and was and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn, and she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. All right, now a couple of things here we need to point out. First of all, the corn there is not corn on the cob type corn. It was grain. The English people call grain corn, and so it's talking about grain here, and in this case it was barley. He had a pile of barley there, and so he laid down by the barley. And so Ruth put this plan into action. She waited until Boaz had eaten and drunk. Now, when it says he ate and drunk, it doesn't mean, it doesn't even imply that he got drunk. The word eat and drunk there is just that he meant that he ate his food and he had something to drink. And it says nothing about what he had to drink. It was a good, satisfying end of the day, had a nice meal. You know how it is after you've worked hard and you come home and you eat a nice meal, you sit back and relax and think, oh, that was nice. And it was satisfying, it met his needs and was provided for him. Now, Boaz laid down next to that pile to protect it from the thieves and he fell asleep. And it was then that Ruth came and uncovered his feet and lay beside them. Now, though this was unusual, there was nothing immoral about it. All right, that's an important force to see. Repeatedly, God tells us that she lay at his feet. Verse number 4 says she laid at his feet, that she was supposed to. Verse number 7 says that she went and uncovered his feet. Verse number 8 it says that she went and lay at his feet. And verse number 14 it says again that she was laying at his feet. All right, very important. God's clarifying it for us. There was nothing immoral that she did, nothing immoral that Boaz did. Now, in our culture, that's very unusual. Right? That's not the way you find a spouse. And it's not even a good idea. And, you know, such an action today is not advisable because it's making provision for the flesh. You know, you just don't do those kind of things. You don't, you know, spend that kind of closeness to someone like that. The Bible tells us in Romans chapter 13, verse 14, it says, "We'll put you on the Lord Jesus Christ and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof." So God doesn't want us to put ourselves into risky, dangerous, or tempting situations like that. But remember, they were living in the day when every man did that which was right in his own eyes. It was a day when people had turned away from God. Apparently, during the time of Ruth, it was one of those episodes in the cycle when the people were actually right with God because they seemed to be focusing on God during that cycle. But it was in that cycle they apparently hadn't been away from God right at that time. And so God was in their hearts. Now, the proposal, verses 8 to 13. Verse 8 says, "And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, 'Who art thou?' And she said, 'I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thine skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman.' And he said, 'Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not young men, neither rich or poor.'" All right, now, let's just stop there for a moment. She's laying at his feet. He rolls over and he feels something at his feet and he's thinking, "What's that?" And his first thought, probably some thief or somebody coming in. And so he's startled by it. He wakes up and he speaks to her sharply. And she says, "It's me, it's Ruth." And you know, and then she asks him in this passage here, she noticed the things he says. No, it was not the usual custom for the Jews to have the woman propose. That's not the normal thing. You think about the Jewish custom. Well, what do we read in the Bible over and over? You read back in Genesis 24, the best chapter in the whole Bible on the Old Testament finding a spouse, and that was when Abraham had his servant go and find a spouse for Isaac, and during that time it was Abraham that made the planning, Abraham that sent off to find the wife, Abraham's servant that actually picked her out. God directed him, of course. But Isaac didn't know anything about it until the day that came and says, "Here's your bride." And he says, "Oh, good." And he takes her. And that was very typical, that the father of the bride and the groom made much of the plans, although the couple did have an option. They could say, "No, I don't like that idea." They did have a choice, but the parents were the ones that were involved in this. So this was very unusual, even in their culture of their day. But in the case of a childless widow, evidently she was the one that was to seek the marriage of her brother-in-law or a close relative. And Ruth did just that when she said, "Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." Right? The word skirt there literally means a wing. Spread your wing over me. Just like the bird, a chicken would spread their wings over their chicks to take care of them. I remember fond memories of a child when we had hens that would get broody and they'd sit on their eggs and they'd hatch out their little chicks. And the mother hen might have 8 or 10 of these little chicks running all over the place and they're all chirping. And she'd see the dog come and she'd make a squawk and they'd all come running. She'd stick her wings out like that and she'd get real fierce and she'd face the dog. And our dog wouldn't hurt her, but she didn't know that. She was protecting her little ones. And she would just get very fierce. And all the little chicks, they'd be underneath mom's wings, and you could see them peeking their little beaks out around her wings, looking to see what was going on out there. But they were protecting themselves. And so that's exactly what this is talking about here, of how a bird protects them, but it was also had to do with how a husband was like the wings of a bird that was protecting his wife in marriage. And so she was actually asking him here, "Spread forth thy skirt over thine handmaid." She was saying, "Would you please marry me? And provide for me and take care of me." And she says, "Thou art a near kinsman." So she's referring to this kinsman redeemer situation. And so she asked him, and Boaz, how does he respond? Verse number 10. And he said, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not the young men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requestest. For all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And now it is true that I am a near kinsman. Howbeit, there be a kinsman nearer than I. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning, that if he will perform unto thee the part of the kinsman, well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of the kinsman to thee, then I will do the part of the kinsman to thee, as the Lord liveth. Lie down until morning. Now, you get from the story here that Boaz pretty much had his idea that this other guy wasn't going to want to do it. I mean, you kind of sense it. He says, I'll do it. I'll perform all that you ask me to do. But he knew he had to do the formal thing first. The formal thing is he had to go talk to the guy that was actually a closer relative. And so, but in his mind, he's thinking, no way this guy's going to want to do that. He's got a family. He's got all his kids. To marry her would really kind of mess things up. And he's not going to want to do that. So Boaz is thinking, yes, I'll do it. It'll be good. But I got to do, go through the formalities. So he accepts the proposal, and he says he blesses her for not seeking another young man, and he agrees to do it as long as this other guy doesn't want it first. And then we find here in verses 14 to 18, her anxious waiting. Verse 14, and she lay at his feet until morning, and she arose up before one could know another. And he said, let it not be known that a woman came into the floor. Also he said, bring thy veil, and thou hast upon thee, and hold it. And he, when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley, and laid it on her, and she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, who art thou, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done unto her. Now, the reason Naomi probably responded like that, remember, this is early in the morning. It hasn't even daybreak yet. The roosters are just starting to crow, but the sun hasn't even come up yet. And she gets home, and Naomi hears her come in and says, who art thou, my daughter? And then she tells her that... In verse 17, she said, these 6 measures of barley gave he me, for he said unto me, go not empty unto thy mother-in-law. And then said she, sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall. For the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day. And what a comfort. You look at that last part there. He gave her a gift. He was obviously in favor. He told her clearly, yes, I will marry you as long as this other guy doesn't want to. And I'm planning on that. That's what I'll do. I'll take care of it. And he sends her home with 6 measures of grain, which was a lot compared to what she was getting when she was just gleaning. And an indication that he was more than happy and willing to be her provider and take care of her. And then when she got home, Naomi says, you sit still and wait. You know, Ruth is all nervous, and you can just imagine, she's just proposed to this guy, and he said he wanted to marry her, but they had to figure out all the details, and so she's all nervous about it, and she says, sit still, it's okay, be calm. He's not going to rest until he's got it settled. He'll work through it. We'll find out in chapter 4. We'll dig into that next. Now, at first, you look at this story of her proposal, and it seems like an interesting novel, but there's more to it than that. There's more to it than that. And hidden in this story are some principles that we can gain from that can be a real blessing, especially when we think about the kinsman redeemer. Now, let me just show you this. I'll tell you right at the start, I'm not a big fan of, trying to make types out of everything in the Bible. You find some commentators and every dinky little thing in the Bible has got a type to it. I don't buy into that. But at the same time, this story of Ruth seems to have one main goal, and that was to tell us where the Messiah would come from, his ancestry, but also to help us to understand the kinsman redeemer and how Christ was our kinsman redeemer. Now, as you look at this story, we see that Naomi is like a faithful witness for Christ. She pointed Ruth to her need for a husband and a kinsman redeemer. She said, Ruth, this is what you need. You need to seek this out. This will meet your needs. And she also, Naomi did not force her. She simply told Ruth what her needs were and what she needed to do. Very much like a witness for Christ would do. Ruth was like the sinner. She did not deserve the marriage or redemption. She didn't earn it. She was a Moabite. She was not even part of their race. And yet, these were lawfully available options to her. They were things that were available to her. And her part was simply to admit her need and step out by faith and ask to be redeemed. And that's what she did. She believed. She went and obeyed Naomi's request. She stepped up by faith and asked Boaz to redeem her. That was a big thing. I mean, can you imagine? Here she's asking a man that, oh, she's friends with. She knows him, but really they don't know much about each other. She's a foreigner. He's an elderly man of Israel. And she goes up to him and said, would you please marry me and buy my property and give me children? And that's basically what she did. And so she stepped up by faith and asked to be redeemed. Boaz, on the other hand, was the wealthy, willing, and happy to pay redeemer. He had the ability to provide for her and to become her husband and to redeem her. And just like Christ willingly paid the priceless cost of our redemption, he also longs to do it for us. You know, Jesus Christ waits. That's why we read in the book of Revelation, the very last things that he says there, he says, about come unto me. And the Lord says, come. He wants people to come to him, and he longs for that. He desires, he paid the debt for us, and he desires for unbelievers to come to him and be saved. You know, without pushing the types too far, I think that you can see that there's principles in this beautiful story that that will help us to understand the redemption of Christ and how that he redeemed us, and our part was to reach out and ask to be redeemed and receive the redemption that he provided for us. We don't deserve it. We can't buy it. We can't pay for it. We're like a helpless widow that has nothing to provide for ourselves, but Christ is willing to pay the debt for us. And so, something for us to remember and ponder and think on, and if you've not yet admitted, you know, some of you young people, if you've not yet admitted that you need the redemption that Christ offers, you need to ask Christ to redeem you. And I urge you to do that soon. That's what Christ offers us. That's what he wants. And we've got to receive it. And so, I trust that tonight you'll take this passage, think about it, ponder it, let it go through your mind, chew on it, and see how there's principles in this passage that can be a real encouragement and a help to us.